anybody out. And I'm an alcoholic. First off, I want to thank the committee for asking me to come out and share this morning. And I really want to thank Sandy and Angie for setting this up. To our new friends who might be here, you know, I sit out in the audience and I see Sandy get up here and see Angie get up here, and we know Clancy's in the group, and we know a lot of some of my good friends, Sharon, you know, and Tom and Clint, and you know, to our new friends, this might be like, man, we got this lineup of these heavy hitters, but you know, what they're talking about is well beyond what I'm capable of doing, you know, and I really want to thank Sandy and Angie for breaking down steps 1 and 2 in easily understandable terms for an alcoholic like me. And I'm glad that we had the format the way that it is, because if you're new to the program Alcoholics Anonymous and you're anything like me and you come to the rooms and you see these steps on the wall and you start thinking to yourself, yeah, these steps look good, but they definitely are not enough to handle my condition. You know, I came in the rooms at 33 years old, and I had given up on life. I had lost pretty much everything that I had ever acquired. I had accumulated some things, and I had lost some things. I was 33 years old, and I was a broken man, and I did not know what life held in store for me. Sandy shared last night about a couple of steps that come before step one. And I had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as I had been living it. And I am grateful for that kind of what Sandy called that divine desperation. You know, I'm grateful for that God don't make misery comfortable. And so I came in here off of, I don't know what recovery or what sobriety holds for me, but I know what my way of living holds for me. And I started, you know, seeking this deal. And I did it out of desperation. I didn't do it out of virtue. And the reason I'm standing up in front of you guys this morning is not because I'm a virtuous guy and not because I'm a good guy. You know, the reason I stand before you this morning is because I discovered a fellowship I crave that introduced me to a power that gives me the power to live one day at a time. And I'm desperate, and I'm still desperate, but in addition to desperate today, I'm grateful. So I started doing the deal and found out what my problem was that Sandy outlined last night, then made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of this power, you know, which is the solution. And when Angie shared that, you know, and share so well on step three, I'm the kind of guy, I'm an alcoholic, and the reason why, and I'm pretty much a trash can, and the reason why I did what I do is I like mine right to the head right now. Right to the head right now. And I want recovery to be like that. I want to get down on my knees, do a third step prayer, and be made whole, no more problems, right to the head right now. And recovery is not a cause and effect deal like that. Recovery is a process. And a lot of times, have you ever heard yourself say, I did step three, I made a decision to turn it over, and I keep taking it back. Angie talked about that. Turn it over, take it back. Turn it over, take it back. You know, step three is a decision. The rest of the steps will turn over my will and my life to the care of God, as I understand it. The process that's outlined in the rest of the steps will turn over my will and my life. Step three is a decision. And as we just read, that decision can have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in me that's blocking me. We've heard some reading today about, you know, seeking God, finding God. You know, and I like the big book Alcoholics Anonymous, and I like it a lot. And one of the reasons I like it, for every step it does three things for me. The first thing it does is it tells me why I need to take a step. It outlines, you know, the desperation and step when you know, and no human power could relieve me. I better have a power bigger than me in step two. In step three, you know, it outlines real clearly how I'm always in collision with other people when I don't turn my will and my life over. You know, and in step four, it's going to give me some concrete reasons why to do an inventory. It tells me why to do it, and finally, it gives me promises at the end of each one of these steps. The results I get as a result of applying a step to my life. And I'm that kind of guy. I like results. I'm practical and I'm pragmatic. God is transformational. And before I get to the point where, you know, I am doing this because, yeah, I want to be about my Father's business, trust me, that's not why I did this at first. I wasn't trying to be about my Father's business. I was trying not to be about the business of drinking. Period. That's it. That's all. I saw other people and it's like, okay, all right. And if that's where you are right now, that's okay, because this is a process, and this process, in my experience, is one that has to be repeated over and over and over and over and over and over again. But there are some results, some practical results, some common sense results for why it is to do it this way as opposed to doing it the other way. What is in an inventory? And we'll talk today. We're not going to do all of the inventory. The inventory is made up of three parts: resentment, sex inventory, and fear inventory. To do any of them justice, you know, I thought about it long and hard. And this morning, we'll just talk about resentment inventory. So we won't talk about sex and we won't talk about fear. Hope that doesn't offend anybody. And I handed out some handouts. And at first, I was kind of like, you know, when you're in a group like this and you hand out handouts, you open yourself up for a whole lot of scrutiny. What is this, you know? And you know, check this out. You know, I don't hold myself out as an authority on how to do the fourth step. I don't hold myself out as an authority on the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't hold myself out as an authority on any of this. I do hold myself out as a drunk who discovered 19 years ago a place and a power. And I walked in grace, and I've been walking under grace ever since. And this is some of the way that it is that I do what I do. That's it. That's all. So feel free to criticize, scrutinize, all the rest of that. I'm not even tripping, you know, because as many people as there are sitting in this room, as many sponsors as there are sitting in this room, find your own niche in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, find your own niche in Alcoholics Anonymous. Sometimes, you know, I come to an event like this and I listen to the way people say that Clancy sponsors and has these words of wisdom. And I'll think, because now I've been anointed sponsored by somebody, that all of a sudden it imbues me with some knowledge I don't have. And they'll sit down and talk to me about, you know, a marriage problem. You know, are you a marriage counselor? No, but I'm a sponsor. I slept at Holiday Inn Express, you know, and I get to, you know, and all of a sudden I get to putting stuff, I don't even, you know. And so one of the things that I am real clear on for a guy like me, I want to have an experience with these steps. I want to have an experience with this process. I want to have an experience with what it is that we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. Not in an intellectual way, not in a theoretical way, in a way that allows a guy like me who stands before you at 52 years old for the first time in his life to do, behave, feel, and conduct himself as a responsible 52-year-old man with dignity, integrity, and responsibility. And that's what it is I talk about. So if we read some things. Well, I throw out a couple of disclaimers anytime we get to inventory. And we're going to talk about resentment inventory. And one of the reasons I pass those out is because on page 64, in dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. One of the first instructions on how to do resentment inventory. And one of the things we need to back up on, and I'm going to back up on, what's an inventory? Bill uses an analogy in the big book, and he compares it to a commercial inventory. He says it's a fact-facing and a fact-finding process. A lot of people do inventories, and I was among them. And I thought that my first inventories was me writing down what I already knew about myself and sharing it with somebody else. And that's not the purpose of inventory at all. Inventory's real purpose is to uncover, discover what it is that I don't know about myself. Uncover the belief system that drives, fuels, motivates me under which I live, you know, and that is the real value of inventory. And I can't take a look in inventory with it just rattling around in my head. Why can't I just, you know, I know this stuff. I know who I resented. Why can't I? No. There's something about pen to paper. And I'll share some other things that don't show up in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, that don't show up in the 12 and 12, but it shows up in my experience. There's something about pen to paper. I've worked with some men and some women who felt as if they were illiterate, who were intimidated by the written word, who were intimidated at the thought of reading. And the process of what it is we do, driven by that kind of desperation that I don't want to drink again, so I'm willing to do what it takes, found out that that boogeyman was not so serious anyway. Just from the act of doing inventory, went back to school, because of pen to paper, the exercise. So there's all kinds of things that happen. You know, and Bill compares it to a fact-finding, fact-facing deal. Let's talk about, what's a commercial venture that most of us are familiar with? Best Buy, Circuit City. I run a store. I'm interested in making money. I want my business to be profitable. You know, and so I keep a lot of inventory in there. And this time we're talking commercial inventory. Inventory is my product, what I sell, what it is that's my stock in trade. And so I have all these, and I'm wondering, damn, you know, I would like to get current in 2005. You know, there are DVDs now and iPods and iPod minis and, you know, these all these new things, but I don't have room for it. And I don't know why. And so then this inventory outfit comes in, and they come in and they start doing inventory, and they say, Ralph, half your store is taken up by these 8-tracks that are like... You got these reel-to-reels over here, you know, you got this, you know, nobody's buying. Nobody's buying. Yeah, but they're in good shape and they're mine. Nobody's buying that. And you know, so what are you saying, Ralph? What does that mean? What's my stock and trade as a person? My stock and trade is my thinking. My stock and trade is my actions. My stock and trade is my feelings. And so a lot of times, you know, this whole idea of, okay, I used to pout to get my way when I was 5 or 6 years old. I'm 52. Ralph, nobody's buying that now. That is not, nobody's buying some of the things that you still do that you think work, that you swear work in your life, nobody's buying. You know, and so we look at and one of the things Bill talks about is to take stock honestly. So we start reading. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. You know, if it's an effort to discover the truth about the stock and trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If an owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. We did exactly the same things with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. If nothing has caused your failure, don't do inventory. If your life, run on your will, is successful, don't bother with inventory. You know, I don't argue with people about inventory and whether or not to pick up pen, the paper, and the rest of that. You know, and that's just me, but I don't spend a lot of time with that. If my life, run on my will, is successful, by all means, have at it. And I don't get mad at people. You know, a lot of people get mad at other folks. You know, I listened to a speaker share one time, and he was talking, and he said, yeah, these people are sitting around in Alcoholics Anonymous, not working those steps. They're miserable and don't even know it. I'm like, they're miserable and don't even know it. Okay. You know, works for me if you, you know. You know, I'm like, but you're miserable that they're miserable and don't know it. They're fine. You're tripped, you know. So I don't even trip. You know, when I work with people, when I get the opportunity to work with people, by all means. But if you're like me, if you're like me, if you're in this number, if you come from the places I come from, if you come from the thinking that I come from, if you come from walking and running into the same walls over and over and over again, if you come from having problems with personal relationships, even sober, if you come from not being able to get up out the bed sometimes, just want to pull your covers up over your head because it just gets like that. If you come from, damn, why is it all falling on me, sober, you might want to take a look at something. So if you come from that place, we can talk about doing this inventory. Practical reasons to do a resentment inventory. Resentment is the number one offender. It talks about we considered self and its common manifestations when we talk about step 4, common manifestations of self, the way Ralph shows up in his life and other people's life. And 3 areas Bill found to be most prevalent. He found sex, resentment, and fears. If we look at those 3 areas, Ralph, maybe you can straighten out spiritually and the mental and the physical will follow. So we looked at those, and we'll just look at resentments this morning. What is resentment? We know that resentment is the number one offender. What is resentment? Resentment is a persistent feeling of ill will, injury, wrongdoing. Literally, it means to re-feel, re-sense a hurt or an injury. So if it's a persistent feeling, and if it means to re-feel, anger is not always a resentment, and I had to get real clear on that. Just like in fears, some fears are God-given instincts. Anger is a God-given instinct, you know. Some things I should get angry about, and sometimes I do get angry about them. If I see somebody molesting my daughter, I'm going to get angry about that right at the time. It's not going to make me happy. I'm not going to sit around here, oh, let me process this. You would look good getting your goddamn hands off my daughter. But I want to be free of the resentment. I don't want it to own me, and I don't want to carry. So some things for me I had to be clear on when we start talking about resentment inventory. And one of the things I have found is a lot of times I think resentments work. I believe resentments work for me. I've been taking care of myself all these many years. Have not been doing too good a job at it, which is why I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. But I've been taking care of me. If you don't look out for you, who will? If you don't get them harder than they got you, they'll come at you next time. If you don't check them the first time they get out of line, they'll get out of line even more the next time, and you really will have to check. So I cannot afford to let them take advantage of me. So I hold on to anger, and I nurse anger. And one of the things I got clear on in looking at resentment inventory, I had to ask myself one question. Do I want to be right or do I want to be free? Resentment inventory, in resentment inventory, I have to get clear on the fact that being free of a resentment does not excuse, condone, or exonerate the behavior that brought the resentment on. Being free of the resentment does not necessarily excuse, condone, or exonerate the behavior. I start thinking, man, for what he did, I gotta stay mad. If I'm not mad about it, isn't that saying that it was okay that he did it to me? And there are two types of resentments we want to talk about now. Angie read about some of them. You know, the most common form of resentment that I have is I made a decision based on self sometime in the past that later on put me in position to be hurt. I stepped on somebody's toes. Very few resentments of mine do I not have a part in. Very few. Very few. And we'll talk about some of those. So when we do resentment inventory, and I'm bouncing around all over, but let's talk about how to do the inventory. And I'm sure most people in here have done inventory. Again, this is just another way, you know, of inventory. Not the way. You know, I'm not one of these guys that's this big step technician. You know, I'm not married to the, you know, some people are, for me, are married to the ritual. I want the result. I want to get to the power. One of the most freeing things about this process, God does not make too hard of terms with those who seek him. Ralph, if you come to me, my son, and you've been running from me all your life, you've been covering me up all your life, you've been putting things on top of me all your life, you've made an intentional, concerted effort to not have anything to do with me from the time you were 16 years old on. So anytime you make the effort, just make the effort. Just make the effort. I'm not hiding. I'm not going to make it hard. You know, sometimes some of my friends, you know, some people can do this process and it'll seem like, oh man, you got to be a, you know, a therapist yourself to do some of this stuff, you know. No. God don't make too hard of terms for those who seek him. It's in the seeking. Sandy said it. Angie said it. It's in the seeking. It's in the seeking. And that's what I start doing in step four. You know, deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. He might have been buried by pomp and worship of other things. That's me, you know. Sometimes in Bill's language in the 30s, I like to update it. You know, he says pomp. You know, some people know that as, you know, showing off, flossing. You know, it might be buried by that. It might be buried by me chasing her. It might be buried by me chasing money. It might be buried by me chasing things. It might be buried by me and my need to be grandiose and to be a big shot. It might be buried by all those things, but deep down inside, it's only there that it can be discovered. And that's what we embark on when we start doing resentment inventory. We set them on paper. We ask ourselves, and we looked at people, institutions, and principles, and we set them on paper. When I do resentment inventory, I like to make it kind of simple for myself. And when I first look at persons, I divide them up into broad categories. I think of family, I think of schoolmates, I think of co-workers, I think of fellowship, you know, I think of church, you know, I think of big, broad groups of people that I've encountered in my life, friends, you know, and I go through that list and I write them down. Principles and institutions, the college I went to, I resented them, I owed them a whole bunch of money, you know, the police department, you know, institutions and the institution of marriage, you know, I had some institutions that I listed also. Principles. Honesty is the best policy. I resented that. No, it's not. Nice guys finish that. You know, some principles. But anyway, so we ask ourselves why we're angry. Then, if you look at the sheet, and so, you know, the big book talks about we ask ourselves why we're angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, pocketbook, ambitions, personal relationships, you know, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So when I do my inventory, my first column is the person, place, or institution. My second person, principle, or institution. My second column I call the finger-pointing column, and it's the easiest column to do. It's the one most of us live in. What you did to me. I'm pissed off because you did this to me. In the first column, my dad. The second column, you know, he left us. Third column. What part of me was hurt, threatened, or interfered with? And the good thing about doing it the way it's outlined in the book is I don't have to guess. And, you know, we look at seven different areas of self. That's what I do. I look at seven different areas of self. And I look at that in the third column. Personal relationships, any relationship where sex is not involved. Sexual relationships, any relationship where sex is involved, real or imagined. You know, self-esteem, what I think about myself, pride, what I think you think about me. Pocketbook, that's self-explanatory, money or property. Security, what I think I need to be okay. And ambition, what I think I want to be okay. And so, and sometimes they're real closely aligned. And Ralph, how do you know if it's this or that? Just put it down, it's your inventory. You know, make the effort. Make the effort. And I look at that. I look and I've discovered that anytime I'm mad, angry, upset persistently with somebody, it's because one of these areas in me was hurt, threatened, or interfered with. You know, my dad, he left us. It affects my self-esteem. If I was important to him, then he wouldn't leave me. The way I look at myself, I must not be important. Pride, he didn't think much of me if he left me. The way I think other people look at me. And I think other people outside of my family look down on me. Damn, your own daddy didn't want you. Ambition, I wanted my family. I wanted an intact family. I wanted an Ozzie and Harriet family. I wanted a father knows best, leave it to beaver relationship with my dad. I wanted him to show up at games for me. Security. I needed to feel protected, and I needed a man in my life. Personal relationships, hurt, threatened, or interfered with. Personal relationship with him was hurt, threatened, and interfered with. I never had one with him. Sexual relationships, that's funny. My dad left me. How does that affect my sexual relationships? It's affected every relationship I've had subsequent. The way I viewed my dad and the way I viewed myself as a result of him. He seemed real weak to me. He left us. He was trifling. And I've always felt like if you really know me, you won't like me and you'll see me as weak. So what I do in relationships is I'll buy you. I just know, you know, that in and of myself, I'm not enough. Pocketbook. Absolutely, it was her threat or interfere with. We had one person in the house bringing in money, and that was my mom, and she was on welfare. So I looked at the seven areas of self. Then I go to the freedom column. My part. And again, they did some reading this morning. Our problems, we think, are basically of our own making. One of the most freeing sentences in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Because if the problem is in me, the solution is in me. I thank God I don't have to wait for you to get better in order for me to get better. I can grow and change independent of whether or not you do anything different with your life. Our problems, we think, are basically of our own making. So I resolutely look for my part in the resentment. Why? Because I want to be able to be free of it. And if I don't have a part, you own me. You own me. So Ralph, what does they mean? My dad, he left us. I was selfish because I was only concerned with how his leaving affected me. I didn't have any regard for his feelings, his needs, his desires, or capabilities. My old man was a janitor raising six boys. I know that must have been an overwhelming, terrifying thought for him. Never considered that. I was dishonest because when he was there, I always wished he was gone. Then I have the nerve to have a resentment that he left us. Me and my brothers used to always talk, I wish he'd just leave. You know, I was dishonest because my old man didn't leave us. My mom put him out. Pencil to paper. Pen to paper. The power of pen to paper. That one light bulb revelation for me when I wrote it down. Because when I just walked around in my life, in my head, which is where I live, it was always, yeah, my old man left us, left my mother with these six boys. When I put pen to paper, caused me to sit down and focus, truth came up to me. And I was like, damn, my mom put him out. He didn't have a choice. So I was dishonest in holding that resentment. Self-seeking, withheld my affection, withheld what it was that I had for him, even when he wanted to reach out for years. For years. Then Bill always talks about we bracketed fear. And I like to put fear right next to when I write my inventory, right next to my fourth column. Because I see some fears I might not see without it. I was afraid of losing legitimacy. Those were back in the days when they called you a bastard if you didn't have an old man, you know. I was afraid of being disrespected and looked down on. I was afraid of being just like him. I was afraid of not having enough. I was afraid of being taken advantage of. So that's just one of the ways that I do resentment inventory. Don't mean that that's what you have to do, but it's freeing for me. And one of the things that I'm committed to in this process of recovery, man, I'm not one of the ones that came in here to the banquet that is Alcoholics Anonymous and will settle for cheese and crackers. I want all mine. I want all mine. I never sat up in a bar, I never sat up in a spot watching you drinking and thought I was going to leave drunk. So I don't come in a room of recovery and watch you taking the steps and think I'm going to be recovered. I take them for myself, and I like mine straight, so I go straight to the book. You know, and so I've been discovering on this journey. Ralph, that's pretty easy when you look at resentments like that. What about other resentments? What about resentments where I just can't see my part? What about resentments that don't fall under the category of invariably we look back and we see where had made a decision based on self would later put us in position to be hurt? Are there any of those? Yeah, I'm not going to ask for hands. But I'm sure somebody in here has been molested as a child. I didn't make a decision based on self to later put me in position to be hurt when that one happened. I lived where I lived. I didn't invite it. I didn't come on to my uncle or my stepdaddy or whoever it was. I didn't seduce them. So how does that one fall in, Ralph? Made a decision based on self to later put me in position? No. So where do I go with that one? That's the one. I'll never let go of that one. I'll never let go of that one. And one of the things for me, in anything that I do in this process, being convinced that my life run on my will can hardly be a success, I go back to that one. Do I want to be right or do I want to be free? Do I want to be right or do I want to be free? Because I hold on to that resentment, and I nurse it, and I fan it, and I fuel it. And I believe that if I let it go, I'll put myself in position to be hurt like that again. And I have to see the truth about that. I'll never be 8 years old defenseless again. I'm 45 or whatever age I am now. I'll never be that age again. Yeah, but if I let go of the resentment, isn't that saying that it was okay that it happened? Being free of the resentment does not mean condoning, excusing, or exonerating the behavior that brought it on. We're talking about a very narrow window of resentments when we talk about these resentments we're talking about now. But I like to go to the extremes because some people sit up in the room and they have them. And those are the ones that own me. Those are the ones that dominate me. Those are the ones that I think I must have and I cannot give up. I have to erect a fence around me to keep you off of me, right? The problem with when I build up those kind is the fences I build to keep you off me end up being the prison that I built to keep me inside. And I'm trapped inside a prison of my own making, and I can't get out. If you're tired of having problems in personal relationships, if you're tired of the person that did this to you, sleeping in your bed with you right now with whoever else you're with, if you're tired of only being able to go so far in a relationship, if you're tired of not being able to go to family gatherings, if you're tired of not being able to take your kids to meet and know the rest of the family, if you're tired of those kinds of things in your life, then I just might be ready, willing, and able to do something about it. And I'm talking about being able to live my life. Sometimes I have to let my ego work for me in that situation. Yeah, you screwed me when I was 8, but you ain't gonna keep screwing me when I'm 44 years old. Enough is enough. I'm gonna get free of the resentment. I'm responsible for the resentment. I may not be responsible for what took place that brought it on. Uncle, stepdaddy molested me. Third column, affected my self-esteem. Damn right it affected my self-esteem the way I looked at me. Affected my pride the way I thought other people looked at me. Absolutely. Absolutely. I just knew the world knew I was dirty and I carried a mark. And they looked at me like that. Affected my ambition. Sure. I didn't want that. I wanted to grow up a normal kid. I wanted to have a normal life. I want to have normal sex relationships now. Affected my security. I can't trust anybody. I don't trust men. I don't trust people. I don't trust my mom. She didn't step up for me. Personal relationships. Won't even go around the family sometime. Too painful at holidays because he's going to be there. Sexual relationships. Married to somebody, in relationships with somebody, keep getting to a certain point, no more. Can't let go all of me. Pocketbook. I'm shopping. I'm putting stuff on top of it. I'm trying to buy love. I'm trying to buy affection. I'm trying to do all this. So all seven areas of self probably affected. And I'm doing a hypothetical, and I hesitate to do hypotheticals. I really don't like to, but I know somebody in here is on that one. Fourth column, Ralph, how do I see my part in that? How can I have a part in that? Was I selfish? Is it selfish of me not to want to be taken advantage of when I was a kid? No. Dishonest? Could be. I've dealt with a lot of people and I've shared with a lot of people. And I only touch a lot of bases because there are a lot of people here and we are going individually asking. But that resentment right there, and that's why doing resentment inventory is personal. Nobody else can do it for you because your experience is your experience. That relationship we're talking about, I might have been molested. Any dishonesty? For some people, maybe not. For some people, dishonesty. It started out as molestation. It ended up prostitution. I was a willing participant, and I knew I'd get something out of it every time. I've shared with people that one. Sometimes dishonesty, sometimes not. Guarantee you, if you cannot find selfish, if you cannot find dishonest, and if you cannot find selfish, you'll always find it in fear. I was frightened. I was frightened of being looked down on. I was frightened of being taken advantage of. I was afraid of being dirty. I was afraid of not being enough. I was afraid I'd never be enough. I was afraid I'd never have a healthy relationship. I was afraid that there's something in me that brought this on. I was afraid that there's something in me that brought it on that you see and everybody else sees. Fear. And so I look at it, and then I go there. Now, and you know, the big book talks about this was our course. Perhaps we realized that these people like ourselves were perhaps spiritually sick. Some people have different ways of looking at that, and the book talks about showing them the same tolerance, pity, and patience. And I'm glad it don't talk about showing them the same forgiveness, because that coming out of step four and step five, I wasn't prepared to do forgiveness yet. I was not. It's not an overnight thing for me. For resentments of that nature. And doesn't require that. Same patience, pity, and tolerance. Do I want to be free or do I want to be right? Do I want to, from this day forward, live my life on a different basis? And that basis is the basis of trusting God rather than trusting myself. That basis is the basis of trusting God for my decision-making rather than, and that's a hard thing, man, because resentment, man, when somebody comes at me and does something to me automatically, did you know, and it's a couple of things, man. In this program, the things that I have found to be indispensable for a guy like me, willingness and humility. Willingness and humility. The humility to let you walk around thinking that you think you've got the better of me and not to say nothing and have to check you. Oh, that's a big one. That's a big one. And more alcoholics than less fall into that. I need to let you know who this is. I need to let you know right now who you're messing with. You know. How many people get to the podium? I never mess with anybody. I just don't mess with me. And then it's on. You know. And I need the humility in that one. You know, it says we avoid retaliation and argument. It might be the dubious luxury of normal people. In a relationship. Because sometimes resentments work for me, right? She's not acting right. He's not acting right. The only time they seem to act right is what? When I'm pissed off. So what do I do? Stay pissed off. And then what do? Look for a reason for them to get pissed off so they can be pissed off so they can have the upper hand. And I think resentments work. And I need to get a new definition of what's working. Is that what I want my relationship to be based on? Who stays mad the longest? As in war, the victor only seemed to win. And so I had to get a new basis for my relationships, new basis of trusting God rather than trusting my finite self. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. Is that plain to me? Is it? Is it plain to me that a life that includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness? What the hell does that mean, Ralph, walking around? Not going to ask for hands. Anybody in here? If you walked in a meeting right now and saw him or her, you want to turn around and walk out right now? Anybody in here ever had a kind of resentment? We got any stalkers in the house? Resentments. I need to see how they show up in my everyday life. And the way that they show up in my everyday life, and the way that they show up in my everyday interaction with other people, has the power to kill an alcoholic like me. Come up in my meeting, I see Chuck, Chuck's with Mike, they're laughing, they stop when they see me, turn around, I just know, oh, yeah, I know they're talking about me. And you know, with a resentment, it gets cold-blooded because when you do the replay, it's like when you do a replay in football. The first hit is cool, but when you see the slow motion hit, oh, man. And so when you're driving home from the meeting, you also now can imagine what Chuck's face looked like. You know? Then you remember the people that were standing around that group. Then you got to 86 that whole group out of your life. Then when they get up to the podium and share and people are clapping and laughing, I get pissed off if I look around and you're supposed to be my friend and you're laughing and clapping when they're sharing. Next thing you know, I'm leaving that meeting. Next thing you know, from the emergency room where I was taking my medicine, I get pissed off at some of the other patients, and I leave. I'll show you. And with us, the drink is the die. One of the common ways and one of the common manifestations of resentment. Dizzy. You know what? Bob Darrell came out a couple of months ago with my brother and I. And he left me stuck, had the nerve to pass a kidney stone or something. Left me stuck doing a workshop. I'm very close to paying him back. You know, I get the opportunity, and I'm grateful anytime I come to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and you guys ask me to share what my understanding is of anything. Because my understanding, you know, it changes and it changes and it changes. The transformational ability of this power that we talk about, if you want to get from point A to point B to our new friends, if you want to get from, yeah, I want to be free of resentments, but what do I do in the meanwhile? What do I do in the meanwhile? Because I have good news for you. I do a resentment inventory every year. It doesn't say to do that in the book. A lot of people say, why would you do it like that? I work with a lot of people, and I like to do what it is that they do sometimes. And I do a resentment inventory every year. Here's the good news, new friends. My first resentment inventory, I had 80-something names. I had a couple of other inventories that had 60-some-odd names and the rest. My resentment inventories for the last few years have been three names, two names, and that's the good news, that this program really, 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 really works. And this program works best when I internalize it and I make it a process of living in my everyday life. You're going to hear some speakers that come up the rest of the day, and what they're going to talk about is the way that these steps work in concert. What they're going to talk about is that after uncovering, discovering, and discarding some of what blocks me from the sunlight of the spirit and starting to form that very basic relationship with that power on easily understandable terms and just seeking that power, the power will, you know, that God don't require my consent or my permission to change me. All he requires is my willingness, you know, and that's pretty much it. He changes me in spite of myself. If I stay willing and if I take the action, he does require my cooperation, but he doesn't require my consent. And I get changed before I know I'm changed. I get changed into the guy that doesn't retaliate while my head still tells me I'm the guy that checks you. I get changed from getting in arguments while my head still tells me I'm the arguing, argumentative guy. I get changed before I know that I'm changed. And most of the time, one of the reasons we do sponsorship and one of the reasons that we do this fellowship the way we do it is I can't see myself when I'm in the frame. And so it takes you guys to point out to me, yeah, Ralph, you're changing. Yeah, this is what's happening. When I do that inventory, I don't see the truth about my stock and trade. It takes a sponsor with me to see the truth and to help me see the truth about my stock and trade. I will think, and when we go to step five, it talks about we think a solitary self-appraisal is insufficient. That's why we share with other people. Because if I do it on my own, I will start thinking that some of my biggest problems and some of my biggest defects are assets to me. Oh, you know, you have the ability to talk. Yeah, your ass is always lying and manipulating. You need to, you know, that gift to gab gets you out of situations. You know, I will not see it for the truth. You know, I won't see it for the truth. So I do this with somebody else, and I do a fifth step. And we think a solitary self-appraisal alone is not enough. Because if you're anything like me, man, humility, humility, humility. We did the sex, we did the fear, and we did the resentment inventory. And I sit down with a sponsor. The big book talks about you can find a clergyman or a priest. You can find a closed-mouth friend or acquaintance. You could even find a family member. Back in 1935 and back in 39 when the book was published, there was no way they could have anticipated a fellowship like ours. There is almost no reason for me now not to do a fifth step with a sponsor or with one of you guys in these rooms. You know, that's just the way it is. You understand what it is I'm trying to do. You aren't going to try to dissuade me from what I'm trying to do. And you have a way of shining a light. You have a way of showing me a mirror. You have a way of allowing me to glean from that what it is I'm supposed to glean from it. You have a way of exposing to me those defects of character that I'm going to take to 6 and 7. And you help me. And one of the biggest things that I get from sharing it with somebody else, because I'm sharp enough and I'm going to tell, well, God already knows. Yeah, Ralph, that's not your deal. You live on this earth. And you know what you're scared of? You are dominated by the world and its people. You're dominated by what you think people think about you. You need to share this fifth step with another person that's looking you eye to eye. You need to share this fifth step with another man and risk him looking at you and risk what it is that you most don't want to risk. If they really know me, they won't like me. And the thing about doing a fifth step, man, I'm amazed. You know, a lot of people do four steps. There's probably some people in here right now sitting on a fourth step that haven't done a fifth step. You know, and that trips me out. You know, doing a fourth step without doing a fifth step, that's like having sex and not coming. Why would you do the... Why would you do the work and not get the benefit? Get the results. And I figure that's always an enticing way to get alcoholics to do an inventory. Ooh, that's what it's like? Yeah, it is. You know? So hurry up. Go get your pen and paper. Do inventory. You know, newcomers, if you can't find a girl, you don't even need to. Just do inventory. Do a fifth step. I'm telling you. And it's free. And a lot of times I say to myself, because the process of the fourth step, you know, that fourth step, what it does is it's designed to do a couple of things. It's designed to reduce my ego. And my ego fights to stay alive. I think Sandy shared about that last night. It fights, and it fights viciously to stay alive. A couple of things happen in that inventory process. First thing that happens, fear steps to the plate. I can't look. Twin brother pride comes along, plus you don't have to. You've been from around here 4 or 5 years. You haven't looked yet. Plus, you don't have to. You all right. You okay. And that's okay if you think you all right. But sometimes I don't know what I'm missing till I take the action. I thought that I walked around with a hunch in my back. You're not a hunchback. That's what you've been carrying all this time. You don't know you've been carrying till you get free. You don't know you've been carrying until you get free. And to our new friends, there's very good reasons to do inventory. There's very good reasons to do inventory. Ralph, what's going to happen if I look at all this stuff, I get rid of my thing, I get rid of all this stuff, what am I going to be left with? Is God going to make me? You know, when I did that third step prayer, I was all scared. Oh, man, what if God has me walking around in a white polyester suit preaching on corners, you know? What if, you know, and... Even though that would have been preferable to my state when I got here, you know, but it comes to me, you know, we probably got a lot of parents in here, don't we? And think about it. Think about it. We have parents in here who have more than one child. And as a parent, as a good parent, am I going to impose on my child what I think it is they need for themselves? Am I going to impose on each one of my kids the same thing? Am I going to say, you're going to be a doctor. You have no aptitude. You have no interest. You have no skill. You have no ability. You have no desire. This is what you... What makes me think God is going to treat his kids like that? Ralph, God is going to make you in your walk. In your walk. We all on the same path, but find your walk on this path. And I kind of look at God like, I have to do it like that. I have to break it down in human terms. If things I find admirable in people, you know, why would I think they aren't the same things that are? So I don't believe God is fitting me to be something I'm not trying to be. And so I go into this process wide open. Wide open. And I look at it like a treasure hunt. If somebody said, Ralph, this is the key. If somebody said, Ralph, I got a truck, new stuff, brand new, furniture, toys, you know, appliances. I got a lot of new stuff for your house. But when I back that truck up to the house, we don't have nowhere to put it. Oh. And if somebody told me, if you clean out all of that, there'll be something new coming to replace it. Bet I'd hurry up and do it. Now, the difference with this one is this. Spiritual gifts I can't see. Spiritual gifts I usually don't appreciate till after the fact. Rearview mirror. But they're coming. And the good news for people like us is we have people in here who've done enough inventories, who've been on this path, who've got in touch with this power, who've accessed this power, who's done the deal, who can tell us, yeah, he's got something good with your name on it too. And he's not tired and he don't discriminate. And he's still in the business of lifting drunks up. He's still in the business of raising them up. And that's the good news, but I gotta make room. You know, so in the fourth and the fifth step, like I said, there are very good reasons to do a fourth and a fifth. I do one, like I said, every year. I'm down to two or three names now, every year. That's the good news that this program has to offer. That for a drunk like me, driven by my circumstance, and if you get driven by your circumstance, if you've been in the rooms for a minute and you've never done a four and five, don't trip. It's not scary. It's not hard. God don't make too hard of turns with those who seek him. You know. And I am so grateful for that line right there. I've been seeking, I've been seeking, I've been seeking, and I've been overpaid. I've had to truck back up. I've had to truck back up, and then I've done what a lot of other alcoholics do. I start burying God underneath the blessings that he give me. And I have to go back to doing some of this other work, you know. But thank God we have a process. Thank God I have a fellowship. Thank God I have you guys. Thank God there's grace. You don't even need to be connected all the time in order to experience grace. You know, I want to thank you guys for sitting here and listening to me. I passed out. And again, these are my definitions. Don't trip. Use them if you want to. Toss them if you don't. I'm hopeful that something that was shared this morning spurs somebody, you know, to get on the road of doing these steps. And again, I really, 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 really want to thank this committee for putting an event like this one on, because I am one of the people that found the power through the process of recovery, through the process of these steps. I talk about these steps, I talk about these power, but more than all of that put together, man, I know that this is a living program and it's within the reach and grasp of anybody out here. My name is Ralph White and I am an alcoholic.